The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you as usual. Today, we're going to be talking about two different issues, and we're going to be talking to an expert who knows them well. We're talking to Fred Burton from Stratfor. And Stratfor is a geopolitical intelligence firm, and you can find him at stratfor.com. But Fred Burton's a chief security officer from there. He's also had a background. He used to also work for State Department and working for diplomatic security and kind of running their counterterrorism operations and also dealing with a number of other different things with them. He understands counterintelligence. He understands counterterrorism. But today we're going to be talking about what happened in London and also talking about what's going on with Russia. So this is going to be a good show. We're going to be dealing with a lot of different issues. Fred, hey, thanks for joining. Thanks for being back on Fed Access.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Derek. It's a true pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you. Hey, you know, we got this situation this week with London. And you know, of course, unfortunately, we always know it's not a matter of when it's going to happen, not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's almost a matter of when it's going to happen, it seems. But what are we seeing from this London situation? You know, are we starting to see a new kind of trend of terrorism? At first, ISIS didn't make a claim. Now it's a so-called ISIS group that's making a claim that this was one of our soldiers. What's going on and what are we seeing and maybe what can we expect?
Well, Derek, we just had another event unfold in Antwerp in Belgium, which very well might have been either a copycat to London. Details are still a little bit murky on that. But when you look at the modus operandi, there really is brilliance and simplicity. And there has been that shift, meaning you no longer have to put together a spectacular attack because your degree of success usually gets thwarted. But there's nothing simpler than simply climbing into a car or a 4x4 or a truck and driving into a crowd and then getting out of that vehicle and, in essence, just using knives. You don't have to procure a pistol. You don't have to know how to put together a bomb. So this is the new norm, I'm sad to say, and I think we're going to see more of these style attacks. It poses unique police and physical security challenges. If you think about any city that you're operating in, much like D.C., think of the crowds walking along any sidewalk, tourist venues, and so forth. So there's more soft target sets to protect than physical barriers and police to prevent against them.
You know, when we look at this situation, Fred, and this has been something that Al-Qaeda and other groups, I mean, I think if I remember in Inspire and in other areas, they were advocating for this, about taking a vehicle, whether it be a car or a truck, and then, like you said, taking just, you know, household knives or whatever and acquiring this. I mean, this is kind of out of the playbook, right, that they've been really have kind of been disseminating this information throughout. Is that right?
You're spot on. I believe it was Inspire edition number 13, which actually came out, I believe, in the winter of 2014, where they encouraged these kinds of vehicular attacks. And then, of course, we saw similar style attacks in places like Nice and Berlin. And we've actually seen these kinds of attacks here in the United States. Most folks have forgotten about them. There was a ramming attack in 2006 at the University of North Carolina, which was a long time ago in this business. But this is also, Derek, something that the Israelis have been dealing with for quite some time, because it's a very effective, tried and true method by the radical Palestinian groups. And there was a recent horrific event in Israel where a bunch of young officers with the Israeli Defense Forces were mowed over by a Palestinian in a big lorry.
Right. Yeah. You know, when we think about this, and I'm even thinking about London right now, I mean, you know, you've got a kind of a two-tiered system of unarmed officers, and then you've got a tier system of kind of the firearms officers. You know, in a place like London, and maybe as we kind of just think about kind of policing around different cities, does that kind of scenario need to change, especially when we're looking at a London? Do you need to kind of change the dynamics in which you need to now arm all police officers in that scenario, especially when that attack can come out of nowhere? You know, do we need to really kind of recalibrate this a little bit? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think so. You and I come from similar backgrounds. I think it's so easy to set back and second guess the physical security arrangements for what was in place in Westminster and think about the events that unfolded. But I don't know if we'll know the answer to this question. If the poor unarmed police officer that was stabbed to death yesterday, would it have made a difference if he had a gun?
Right.
I think that if you're going to have cops out there on the front lines and currently they're targets today, then you need to give them weapons to at least defend themselves.
Right. You know, as we're thinking about this, and Fred, I know you kind of deal with it on a number of different levels in terms of kind of the soft targets. You know, when we're looking at whether it be hotels or businesses or other things of this sort, and even, you know, one thing that concerns me is that it seems as if a lot of these people who are perpetrating these attacks, they're hiding in plain sight, you know, and what has always happened is that we always hear that they were on the radar, right? I mean, we hear this all the time. They were on the radar. They got interviewed and everything else. Somebody said, you know, they you know, the police or the federal agencies have interviewed them. How do we deal with that? Because we everybody, I mean, from Orlando to here and so many other occasions, they've always been on the radar, you know, and somebody talked to them. But then maybe several years later, then they pop up. Is there a time period in which, you know, people evolve, or do we, and I know it's impossible to do this, we cannot surveil everybody who's on the radar, but how do we deal with this, Fred?
Well, Derek, I think the model is broke. We've had quite a lot of discussions here at Stratfor on this, and I've been thinking a lot about this as well. When you look at all of these suspects, even going back to the Boston bombers, where the Russian FSB had reported adverse intelligence on the brothers in Boston. All of these suspects of recent note have been looked at, investigated, and ruled out to be a threat. So clearly, the model that we're applying is not working. And I think that this is going to take some very hard questions that no doubt the Brits are going to ask themselves, such as Scotland Yard and MI5. But I think the FBI has to, too, and the U.S. intelligence community, meaning I think that how we have assessed these individuals after we've investigated them just isn't working. And I know nobody wants to hear that, and I know that people will say, well, there's just too many suspects, or there's only time limits placed upon this by Department of Justice guidelines here in the United States and so forth. But at the end of the day, all of these attacks are being carried out by people that have been investigated before.
Right.
So however we're doing this is simply not working.
It truly isn't. And I'm wondering, and of course, it's that balance between the rights and liberties that we give people. And of course, we don't want to necessarily start to change that, so to say. But it almost seems as if, and I don't know what the time period has been on a lot of these attackers. Is it years before, once they're interviewed, is it years in which, you know, that begins to foster inside their system? Or are they just kind of like almost a sleeper cell? Are they just waiting for the right moment in which to do something? You know, I mean, because it's always been a couple years after they've been interviewed or whatever period of time. And then all of a sudden, they'll go ahead and perpetrate, you know, an attack, and it may be the anniversary or something. And I don't even necessarily know if that's always the catalyst, but it does seem as if we've got to have a holistic conversation. Do you think that our federal agencies are hesitant to have this, or in our state local agencies are hesitant to have this conversation? Because you would think that we would be here by now, Fred.
Well, we're not. I think we get back to big picture strategic issues, Derek, such as, why don't the uniformed cops on the street have more actionable intelligence? That still hasn't been fixed.
And you know me and you've been talking about that forever, Fred.
We have. And, I talk to cops every day around not only the great state of Texas, but around the country. When I travel, I always make a point to visit with police officers and ask them about their problems and so forth. It's one thing for the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force is to have all this highly so-called classified information and ongoing investigative information, but if the cops, or I would even go so far to say the first responders, fire and EMS, are out of the loop on some of this kind of information, that's your first breakdown. But when you look at this from just an investigative perspective, I think that agencies are always reluctant to address these issues because of bureaucracy, and some of these issues are too tough, I think, for bureaucracies to figure out, and nobody likes to rock the boat on the inside. There's a lot of I think systemic failures with agencies when it comes to issues such as this. You and I both know how easy it's to say, well, this is how it's always been done. So that doesn't mean that it's right.
Right.
But clearly, when you look at this laundry list of suspects, and if you bring it back to home here in the United States, pretty much every terrorist attack we've had here domestically over the last, since Boston, have been with individuals that are of previous record.
All right, right, right. We got to take a quick break, Fred. I want to keep on this conversation because I just think we got to just kind of keep on. And to me, we're at a critical situation now where this has to be heard. And I'm hoping that federal leaders who may be listening, or, you know, just different constituents may kind of, you know, hear this, because we've got to make a change in order to really begin to identify certain things. I want to keep this conversation going. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Fred Burton. He's the chief security officer at Stratfor. Stratfor is a private intelligence firm that focuses in on all the issues, whether it be terrorism, whether it be global affairs, counterintelligence issues, cyber issues, or whatever the case is. But you can find them at stratfor.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll keep this conversation going. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a great conversation talking about the issues of confronting terrorism, the issues that are right now that are really paramount right now. We've been dealing with this every year consistently. It's not just a 9/11 situation. It's not just a 2017 situation. Terrorism has been around for a long time, since the 70s and before, if you run back the history of it. But we're really kind of talking about it from a standpoint of the London attacks and also how to deal with this. I mean, we keep on having these same kind of conversations, but how do we get past a point of dealing with certain things? We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the chief security officer of Stratfor, and you can find them at stratfor.com. But they're a geopolitical intelligence firm that covers all the different issues of the day, all the different international issues and national security issues and international securities of the day. Fred has a background working at State Department, dealing with counterterrorism, and also just dealing with a number of issues around the world. Fred, me and you were just talking about this, and I know you were saying about the law enforcement and kind of going with that model. I think back to Boston. I think even to this London situation, a lot of times, like you said, the officer on the ground has not been given this intelligence. And I always kind of think about this just from the Boston bomber standpoint, that if a regular patrol officer had been given the picture of these guys, on that day and say, listen, just be on the lookout. If you see one of these guys, right, take a look at them. They had on a backpack, right? They had on certain things that were kind of obvious indicators. You would have reasonable suspicion to stop this person. You know, that could have saved so many lives just right then and there. If the officer in London possibly had the picture of this guy, you know, and he, you know, but that probably was at the higher level, and that information didn't come down to him, then he could have maybe spot this person and be like, oh, this is somebody I need to, you know, watch out for a little bit more. Let me see what's going on. Why is it stovepiping that this information is not getting down to the frontline officer?
Well, I think you raise a very good question. I think that it's, one, a classification issue. Two, at times the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. If you think on a operational level, you'll have, take D.C. As an example. You'll have Metropolitan police officers that are assigned to an FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force. They're in essence working for the FBI, and they'll have access to information that those beat cops won't, that are the first responders to any given time,
right,
to any kind of radio call. And I agree with you. I think that I know from having been a street police officer and then also a special agent that if intelligence information is given at roll calls or passed out, you know, cops take it seriously. Mm-hmm. They're looking for them, and there's nobody better than knowing their beats or areas of responsibility than those patrol officers. And I think you're right. We haven't fixed that for as many years as DHS has been in existence. That's one of the first failure points, I think, in our war on terror, whatever we're calling it today.
Right. Whatever the new word is. Right. Yeah. And Fred, I mean, just even going with that, think about San Bernardino. Right. With the beat cop, if the beat cop knows this area and he knows that, hey, listen, this person is on the watch list. I mean, again, you don't have to harass anybody, but you can, again, patrol that area, New York. I mean, you can then maybe pay some special attention to that person who's on the list. You know who they are. You know if they pull out, you know, from their area. You know you can do a check on the welfare. I mean, there's a number of different tools that a regular officer has that, you know, would not necessarily be in violation of anyone's rights, but you can begin checking on certain things to make sure everything is good to go.
Well, one possible solution, I know we've talked about a lot of problems, Derek, but one possible solution or model that I think works fairly well, if not about as good as you can get, and that's the Secret Service model of when they have individuals that threaten a protectee, they'll go out and talk to them and investigate them, and if they don't think that they pose an immediate danger, they'll database those individuals and then quarterly, they'll revisit with them and see how they're doing. Gives you an opportunity to chat with that person, perhaps even be invited in for a cup of coffee at times. And
it lets you
assess the situation. And so if you think of that kind of model and you put it in a police patrol beat kind of framework, what harm could it do if that officer could stop by and chat with some of these folks at times, or at least make an effort to develop some sort of rapport, or at least to be able to keep an eye on a house to say, well, you know, there's some strange things going on in that garage pretty much every night. I really don't know what it is, but let me pass that back to the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and maybe we need to get some eyes on that house. So.
Right.
There's always been a reluctance to stovepipe information, and I don't know why, other than because it's always been that way, is the usual answer.
You know, when we think about this from even an industry side, Fred, I mean, what are you talking to? What are the concerns that are coming out of, you know, either the hotel industry or the critical infrastructure companies, or, you know, just any of the kind of the companies and organizations that sometimes you have to talk to? What are their concerns about this kind of terrorism? I mean, are they concerned about just kind of being targeted? Are they talking to their security people about some of the things that we're talking about today, about identifying these threats and maybe hardening themselves a little bit more? What are we hearing from the industry?
Well, the Fortune 50s that we do business with are certainly concerned. You know, they might be headquartered in the United States, but they view themselves as global companies.
Mm-hmm.
So They worry about their employees traveling, taking a day off, and walking by Big Ben when something like this occurs. They're also greatly worried about insider threats, meaning this 52-year-old terrorist that carried out this attack in London, I'm sure he worked somewhere.
Right.
Or maybe he didn't. But they're worried about what are the probabilities that I have this kind of person predisposed towards this behavior in my workplace, therefore, you think in context of your San Bernardino attack. So they will look at companies like us and say, how do we find these people ahead of time?
Right.
What do we look for? And everybody's looking for that kind of brass ring, and it becomes a very difficult kind of problem because of HR reasons, legal reasons, privacy concerns, and so forth. So, but there is a tremendous amount of angst in the multinational corporation world that we talk to for how to not only prevent one of these kinds of attacks from unfolding, but how do we even, or where do we set up our company picnic because we don't want to be in a place where somebody could drive a truck through it.
Right, right, right. I mean, now, I mean, when we look at the knee situation and everything, I mean, we just look at, you know, simple, and it's not even, sometimes it's not even your main cities. It could be an obscure, just really kind of, you know, off spot area that now somebody's like, well, I'm going to just go through and ram a truck through this area. So now it makes everyone feel, no matter where you're at, whether you're a major city like a D.C. or London, or if you're down in just off the beach somewhere and just at a 4th of July holiday, you could still be a target.
That makes the challenge so much more difficult because of the brilliance and simplicity when it comes to the latest MO that we're seeing with the use of a car.
Right.
And then a tad bit more complicated with you know, getting that person out of the vehicle with a knife, but not hard to do. You know, this London model is that kind of event and scenario that is very difficult to protect against.
That's right. That's right. Fred, you kind of drew us into to where we're going to go next. You kind of talked about this insider threat scenario. I want to talk to you because you've got a lot of experience in dealing with kind of the counterintelligence side, especially, you know, when you've dealt with things at State Department and other areas. But we've got this situation now with the Russians, and we're dealing with it with Russians, Chinese, and everything else, but it's definitely more high profile with the Russian situation. But I want to talk about the counterintelligence situation that we're dealing with the U.S. government, but what we're seeing across the world in terms of insider threat, the amount of espionage that's going on, and also the amount of infiltration that's happening, with it, whether it be governments or companies or other things of that sort. I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is at Stratfor. He's the chief security officer at Stratfor, and you can find Stratfor at stratfor.com. We're going to be right back after this break and keep the conversation going. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a conversation about two really critical topics. One, terrorism and countering terrorism. And now we're going to start talking about intelligence and talking about espionage, counterintelligence. And we're going to be talking about this. And you've heard about it in the news a lot. You hear about this Russia situation. But counterintelligence is not necessarily something that's brand new. It's been around for quite some time. And sometime maybe you've heard about it but didn't really pay attention to it. We want to talk about this insider threat, the infiltration, the information operations that are going on right now in terms of our government, but just really across the world. We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the chief security officer at Stratfor, and he is one of the experts. He's dealt with a number of these different issues close up at Stratfor, but also at State Department and other places, and he's given us a heads up of what's happening. Fred, first, before we kind of go into this, I want to kind of help people understand counterintelligence. They're hearing about it more now. They're hearing about FBI counterintelligence. But even at State Department, you guys did a lot of counterintelligence, dealing with a lot, especially with the embassies that you had across overseas. You guys had to deal. What is counterintelligence, if you can define that for some people?
Well, it's the ability to protect your intellectual property, or if you're with the government, your ability to protect your secrets against hostile nation states, you know, the likes of Russia and China, trying to target your employees for recruitment, as well as to get access to your secrets.
You know, when we think about this, what is the threat right now? And also, too, how good are the Russians right now? You talked about Russia and China. What's the threat between those two, and how good are them right, in terms of their infiltration?
Well, both of those nation states' intelligence services are extraordinarily capable of everything from hacking to targeted assassinations if they choose to go down that path. If you envision the capabilities of our NSA, our CIA, our FBI, the Russians and the Chinese are just as good. And some would say that a little bit better at times on the cyber front, because the Russians can contract out work to organized crime and professional hackers. And believe it or not, we don't tend to do that as a nation state. So some of these hackers and so forth have, you know, they don't need to follow any kind of rules or regulations or laws. If they want you, they're just going to target you. So this new frontier of cyber, Derek, is one that companies struggle with to try to defend themselves, to protect themselves. And it's one that is not going to go away in our lifetime.
You know, we're seeing this whole thing about not only the penetration of organizations in terms of getting their secrets, but now we're also seeing these information operations, persuasion operations. Is this thing going to just grow, Fred? I mean, is this kind of the kind of becoming the new norm for us?
It's really an interesting question, because I was just doing some research back into the Russian KGB activities in the United States in the 60s and the 70s. And they're pretty good when it comes to these information campaigns, meaning the Russians in the 60s and the 70s were carrying out a whole range of clandestine action here in the United States to try to fuel racial violence. They were supporting the bomb throwers of the era, like the Weather Underground and the Black Panther Party. So it's kind of fascinating that the Russians are still up to that kind of activity. But I think, you know, certain intelligence services have a leaning towards how they carry out their actions. And I think the Russians are quite good at this when it comes to the informational warfare that goes on. And so I would expect this to continue in the foreseeable future.
You know, when you're dealing with and you know, the Fortune 50 companies and all the other people who you consult with, and they're talking about kind of this insider threat. I mean, there's one thing of kind of the a hacker maybe penetrating your network, but some of the cyber threat is really individuals. Would you say that, Fred? I mean, is sometimes the individual employee who either is going to give away those secrets, or because of either phishing attacks or whatever the case is, they hit on that wrong button, and either they're not educated enough, and then they open the network up to basically exposure to malware or ransomware or a bot or any kind of program that can kind of infiltrate into that system. What are you seeing, and what are you talking to these organizations about?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. There's usually two concerns when we talk to the Fortune 50s, and it centers on the spear phishing, someone opening up some email that infects your system to allow access to an intruder. And then the other is there's great fear of the next Snowden kind of person. And you know, no greater fear than in and around the Beltway, for sure, in the D.C. area, because of just the support to the U.S. government with all the different contractors. So that's the biggest fears I hear on a fairly consistent basis. And again, what companies are looking for is some sort of model or some sort of software to help me identify that insider threat, meaning not per se to put up cyber walls, though that is important, Derek. It's more centered on what kind of personality behavior or profile do I need to look for, or behaviors in the workplace to tell me that that person could be predisposed to be the next Snowden.
Right, right. You know, Fred, as I'm thinking about it, because I think about the different personalities, right? I'm thinking about whether it be Ames or Hansen or even run up to Snowden. I mean, very different people, right? You know what I mean? In terms of who they were and their motivations and all the other kind of different things. You've got all these kind of very, very different people. Is there a program that could honestly begin to kind of look at those kind of personality profiles and look at certain indicators? I mean, that's why we have the indicators like financial situations or whatever. But it seems as if some of the motivations are even starting to change right now. I mean, whether it be ideology, you know, ideology or certain other areas why people are doing things. Is there a magic bullet, or we're still looking?
I think we're getting there. When I say that, There are companies that are developing and in the process of, for example, beta testing different kinds of software programs that would be installed at a big company. So let's say for the sake of argument that you have an employee that somehow based on badge reader access control shows up outside of his or her working hours. When it looks and scans, it also finds out that the security department is looking at that person for theft. Then it also shows that that person's travel patterns are something unusual. So it's trying to connect the dots internally to show you that this behavior that this employee is exhibiting, predicated on a range of different issues that have been preset depending upon the business and the company, to allow HR, legal, and the corporate security officer to have a little deeper dive into that person. Having said that, there might be simple and legitimate reasons for that person to be there working on late on a Saturday night, but maybe not. So that's the kind of model that I see companies looking for to be able to identify that kind of person.
We're talking to Fred Burton. He is the Chief Security Officer at Stratfor. You can find him at stratfor.com. Fred is an expert on these issues, dealing with whether it be terrorism or dealing with counterintelligence, cyber issues. And we're talking to him today to kind of get the insight about what's going on, these insider threats, this influence from Russia that we're starting to see, this espionage that's at a very, very high level right now to kind of find out what's going on. We're going to talk about this in the last segment. I got a couple more questions for Fred to kind of get his insight about what we're seeing today, especially as it's influencing America, and really see what can we do about it as we go forward. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about a number of critical issues of the day, both terrorism, but then also just really the dynamics of intelligence, counterintelligence, looking at what's going on, Russia, China, all these different areas. We are seeing, I'm going to talk to Fred about this, but this may be an unparalleled time in terms of what we're seeing with Russia in terms of influence operations and everything else. And they have done it before, as Fred was stating. They've done it back in the 60s in other areas. But we wonder, is this a kind of a new kind of climate with the cyber and social media and the influence that they're able to do and just the penetration they can get into different organizations and the insider threats? Are we looking at a different kind of time? We're talking to Fred Burton right now. He's the Chief Security Officer at Stratfor, and you can find him at stratfor.com. It's a geopolitical intelligence firm that does a lot of great work, a lot of great issues that they cover. Check them out. Fred, you know, I was just kind of mentioning, is this an unparalleled time? I mean, you've seen a number of different times, and you've also done some of the historical research. Would you say we're in a different time right now? Is this unparalleled? Have you seen the level of influence in terms of we've got a government in crisis right now? We've got concerns that there are investigations with the presidential party and everything else. We've got insider threats concerns. Is this a new level of the game, or are we kind of repeating history?
I think, Derek, that certainly with the social media and 24/7 news cycle, it very much is amplified. So it is always there, and we're always watching it, whether it be via Twitter or radio or TV news. But again, for students of history, if you go back and you examine the unrest and the chaos in our country in the 60s and the 70s, we certainly were at a very heightened tempo during that time period with the targeting of law enforcement and the bombings of educational institutions and suspicious fires and just the domestic chaos. I would put it in a similar kind of par if you're looking at this from a cyclical perspective, with the addition, though, with the added addition of cyber. So that added addition of cyber puts it into a new elevated realm to where you have the domestic chaos, of course, and the terrorism, but then now you have that added cyber kind of ingredient.
Right. You know, when we look at it, Fred, and as we kind of think about, you know, how to deal with it, and even how to maybe deal with some of these threats from foreign countries and the influence, you know, of them, of maybe whether they're using monetary influence or they're using certain other areas of blackmail or other things like that. How do we counter it? I mean, how do has the infiltration taken hold so much, or can this be countered at any point? I mean, we came out of the 60s and 70s, and it seemed as if we've got a little normalization a little bit. How do we deal with it now?
I think it's the kind of strategic problem that when you look at this in our days of social media with everybody with Facebook and Twitter and so forth, Derek, that it's very difficult not to have an online presence. Therefore, it makes it extraordinarily easy if I'm sitting back in China or back at Moscow Center to go into your LinkedIn profile, identify who your associates are, and just try to network into people. And I think that's the new kind of frontier that all of us that were, you know, I grew up in the 60s, we did not have that concern. And today, when you look at it from a counterintelligence perspective, those are the kinds of issues that are challenging, meaning how do you find people that don't have a social media presence today? And then how do you prevent those kinds of networks and connections to not be viewed by the Russian FSB or SVR or the Chinese PLA or MSS?
You know, I was just having a conversation recently, Fred, and I want your take on this. Somebody was telling me that they're starting to use HR tools now. They're starting to look at people's resumes, or they'll put out a fake job posting or something like that to collect information. So if you're not on LinkedIn or you're on other areas, they'll try to get access to a resume. And then sometimes the resume can walk people back on what you're working on. Even if you it's a classified type resume, I mean, the right keywords can let a person know what a person is doing or what kind of program they worked on. Have you been hearing anything about that?
I have heard of that. I've not seen an example of that or had a company come to us with that, but I am in the loop on what you just said, and I think it is that kind of issue. If you post that kind of material out there, it's certainly going to be scraped and cobbled together. And when you look at the intelligence services of China with so many resources that they have to throw at a problem, I mean, in the thousands of individuals that can just scrape your entire network, it's very hard to prevent that from occurring.
You know, when you think about this from a standpoint of just intelligence and counterintelligence and all the other areas of kind of preventing the intellectual property, what's the business sector? I mean, of course, we're worried about certain kind of pieces, but is this a problem for, you know, the medium and the small business just as much as it's a problem for the Fortune 50? I mean, you know, should everybody now be kind of looking at things from a counterintelligence standpoint about protecting the intellectual property? I mean, I know the U.S. government did a really big push out to bring in small businesses at, you know, one point in time. You know, how deep does this need to go in terms of kind of the American thread of industry and other places? How, you know, do we need to secure all these, you know, small businesses, medium size, big businesses? Where do we need to go with this?
Well, we see evidence of small businesses being affected by this on a daily basis. It wasn't too long ago that a friend of our company here, their company was held hostage by ransomware, and criminals wanted cash in order to release all their data. So we see that on a mom and pop level, and we also see that on a Fortune 100 level. And so it would be our advice and counsel that it is something that every business needs to think about today if you have a web presence. And it's very hard not to have a web presence in today's world. In fact, it's unusual. I mean, think about even your colleagues and coworkers, or even your HR teams when they go to interview people. You know, the first thing that folks look at is your Facebook and Twitter Right. and LinkedIn account. And maybe Instagram, and to try to take a look at it to see what's fact or fiction.
Right, right, right. I mean, it is very, very difficult to just kind of go black and get offline. You know, I think about this from also a standpoint, too, of the international business traveler. What are you seeing, and what would be some of your recommendations for, you know, whether it be a small, medium size? I mean, a lot of things are global now. But if you go into a place like a Russia, or you go into a place like China or whatever, should you automatically assume you're in a surveillance state or even in other places around the world? I mean, what is your advice for those international travelers in terms of protecting themselves, you know, going to hotels, going to other areas where your intellectual property won't, or you won't be put into a position where you get it blackmailed?
First, you are traveling to surveillance states. If you're traveling into Russia or China and they have an interest in you, they will be all over you, not only physically but electronically. So our counsel to those international business persons are you need to travel with a clean notebook. You need to travel with a clean phone, because the moment that you hit any of those lines once you're in that country, if they so choose, they can collect it all. So if you want your intellectual property taken, assume that it is being taken in those two nation states. But also, more importantly, and this also wakes up a lot of executives, Derek, is all your contact information, all your pictures of your kids and family member and your mother and your father, all that's also being collected. So that's usually the tripwire to get executives to leave that kind of material at home. But it is a challenge that has been there for a while now. In the 70s and 80s, you know, the Russians or the Chinese would just target diplomats or suspected intelligence officers. And you're also dealing with two paranoid nations where you have an international business person that's traveling in that country. These state services of China and Russia are looking at those persons as possibly having some nexus to either British SIS or the American CIA.
Right.
So they're going to rule that out. So that's why there's a lot of interest on the part of their intelligence services in trying to determine who that person is.
So they automatically assume that you are part of it unless proven otherwise.
that's correct. And rest assured that they'll put you in the exact hotel room that they want you to be in.
Right.
So they can monitor your behavior once you're there, too.
Always great advice, Fred. I just thank you so much. I mean, because, you know, this is stuff that people need to know. We are in a time of surveillance. We are in a time of espionage. We're in a time of, you know, intelligence gathering on all levels. So everybody needs to be aware of what's going on. And of course, Fred, I'm going to always have you back to kind of continue to inform the public of what's going on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.